gentlemen, welcome to the Poetry Appreciation Society. Our subject today has been variously described as the second inventor of football, the last number 10, the new Maradona, immature, moody, a pecho frio, and by Louis van Gaal as a political signing. Juan Roman Riquelme was never going to be Van Gaal's type. Kids, put the word nutmeg into your favourite video channel and you'll find Riquelme soon enough, although it might just be a little bit blurred. The Argentine playmaker divided opinion when it came to teammates and coaches, but time and YouTube are serving his legend well. He was already a star in South America before he made his first move to Europe and Barcelona in the summer of 2002. Genuinely, the hit songs from 2002, all quite appropriate, really, for the man who is the subject of our study today, Without Me, Complicated, How You Remind Me, Dilemma, Juan Roman Riquelme. Why are we talking about this guy, Terry? There were better players, there have been more successful players, but guys with bigger trophy cabinets, guys who've scored more goals. Why do people like him?
Good question. I think we'll find out and see how popular this podcast is. I liked him. I think it coincided with us. It's weird, isn't it? He is like a whole long list of various players over the years that have been described as the new Maradona. His career path was very similar to Maradona's at the start of their careers and ultimately at the end as well. He was a number 10, which is cool to for people to like. And there was an attitude about him. But from a purely technical point of view, he used the underneath of his boot more times in one game than I did in a 14-year playing career. So he was unique in his style. Plus, like all these, I hate the cliches, but maverick, rebellious type players that attract attention because of their skills, because of their refusal to conform to what everybody else does. Everybody sees them as slightly different, which he is clearly is one of them. And that in itself makes attractive to a lot of people as well, a rebel with a cause, and he certainly was that.
He was the oldest of 11 children.
I know.
Interesting start in life. His dad was apparently, so you read, his dad was in a gang before. So he had a success. He came through Argentina's juniors to Boca. He won the Argentine title twice. He won two Copa Libertadores and he won the Intercontinental Cup as well. That was against the Galacticos as
yes.
well. So it's unusual for the South American side to be stronger or to win that game against the European team. So he was no mug when he came over in very in trying circumstances, because again his brother was kidnapped and he had to make an appeal, pay the money. His mum was seriously ill, so all of that is very, very tricky for a guy who's quite a complicated character anyway. So it must have been a very difficult transition, first of all.
It's interesting doing this podcast and looking at deeper than just what I liked as a player in him. The eldest of 11 kids as well is, when you look at the personality that he became in football, he pretty much falls out with everyone. Managers bent over backwards because of his talent to try and accommodate him, but they only gave it a certain period of time before even they had enough, with managers that really put their faith in him either lost their job or he went. And it's when you look at the eldest of 11 kids as well. I mean, I've got two sisters. I had teammates who were only child. We underestimate sometimes what it... I mean, he was called a loner. I'm not surprised. If you're the oldest of 11 kids, I'm not surprised you want to be at peace and quiet when you're apparently a family that weren't particularly wealthy, the opposite of being wealthy. And like we see with so many of these super talented footballers that come from South America that have had to, you know, work hard for every penny that they've got and food to be put on the table every day. He had been babysitting from God knows what age, looking after the rest of the siblings. I'm not surprised he had a different personality to someone that was an only child or, you know, in a relatively small family. 11 kids, the eldest. That goes a long way to sort of, you know, explaining perhaps something we overlook in football, the social side of the player's career.
So let's talk about his year at Barcelona. Only 1 year as a player actually playing for Barcelona. And I guess he was unfortunate in that most of that coincided with Louis van Gaal, who, you know, this weird... Well, he described him as a political signing. Presumably, he meant by that Raquel May, because he'd been a South American Player of the Year, because he'd won the Copa de Libertadores, he was the kind of signing that a club president, a candidate for the presidency, would love, because it would interest the fans, it would get people excited. And he got there, and Van Gaal looks at him, and he looks at his downside and says, no, not...
And made
no
him charge to play on the wing.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, half the appearances he made for Barcelona were as a substitute, and Van Gaal tried to make him into a winger and to accommodate him, and he didn't have the pace to play on the wing. Mm. He wouldn't have had the mentality to play on the wing and track back and work up and down in a straight line. You had to give him total freedom.
And so... I guess he was just unlucky, wasn't he? That
he was unlucky that Van Gaal was the manager. I know, yeah. I've got a respect for Van Gaal, but you would hope that... I would have hoped, looking back now, that Van Gaal would have been, yeah, he's fantastic at football. I can make this work. I can be creative to have a talented footballer like that. But he obviously didn't want that to happen, Van Gaal.
And then, so after his 1 year, they moved him on because of the number of non-EU players. And they replaced him with Ronaldinho.
Yeah, not
bad. We'll do another show another day on Ronaldinho.
Yeah.
But in many ways, as a personality, quite similar. But had a better time at Barcelona, obviously.
Yeah, and Ronaldinho played with a smile on his face.
Yeah.
As opposed to Riquelme, who played with a bit of a snarl. But it made both players equally interesting and attractive to watch in their own way.
And then, so in terms of his European career, the making of him really, is it fair to say that often what makes or breaks a player is the level of club, finding the level of club at which you can thrive? And in his case, he went to Villarreal, who were a club on the up, no history.
Yeah, no history, provincial club. And
Pellegrini arrived soon after they'd made the deal for Riquelme to go there.
But he got the first manager to sack.
Yes, yeah.
And that the first manager was Benito Floro, who's a well-respected Spanish manager over the years, and he's worked since then for other big clubs. I think he had a spell at Real Madrid as the director of football at one stage. And he was all for Riquelme coming into the club. It was a massive coup for Villarreal, who had started going down that road of South American players, because the economic climate in South America and Argentina in particular meant that players were happy to come to Europe because of the currency and the value of the currency. So it was a good idea for Villarreal, who have had loads of success, by the way, since by doing that. And the manager wanted him, but I think he asked him to report early for training one day, didn't he, to have treatment on an injury. And he refused and turned up late and then refused to train. And then that continued for a while. And then Fernando Roig,
yeah,
the chairman, who's still involved now, had to choose Riquelme or the well-respected manager that had got them up divisions and whatever. And he chose Riquelme, so that he went. Pellegrini come in. And it all started to click for Villarreal. I guess, who would you compare VRL then to now? Would it be APAR with a bigger stadium, Leganés with a slightly bigger stadium and a more attractive style of football? But I don't know. Yeah. I'm being totally honest. I don't know if VRL immediately coming to La Liga and started playing the VRL style, or whether it was when Riquelme and Pellegrini and things have progressed over the years. But that was to imagine Riquelme coming from Boca Juniors, going to Barcelona, and then going on loan. It's hard to sort of put it in perspective what they would be like now if someone joins Barcelona on loan from one of the giant clubs in South America, and within a year was on loan and quite rightly regarded at that time as one of the most exciting players in the world, to then suddenly I would say drop down, I think it's a fair assumption to make, to a smaller club with not a lot of history, only been in the league for two or three seasons for the first time ever. That was a massive signing for Villarreal, massive statement of intent as well.
Riquelme sigue Dieguito Martín para Riquelme, gol de Riquelme.
Was he fortunate, though, that he was at the size of a club? Was it a good decision to go to a club where he could be the undoubted superstar and do what he wants and get away with? He went back to South America when he wanted to. He missed training. Pellegrini seems a very affable guy, doesn't he, Pellegrini?
So yeah. They brought other Argentinian players to cheer him up.
Yeah.
Bring his mates over to play alongside him. I think Forlan as well, eventually it works out. They had the same agent and they had come across each other in set when they were both playing in Argentina. So everything was geared around to try and impress and keep their star player happy. And it worked for a while. And it was a spectacular success.
Yeah, because he had
two... Not in terms of trophies. We're not going to be talking about him filling his trophy cabinet. We've mentioned the trophies in Argentinian football, Boca Juniors, the importance of them to his career there. But in terms of the rest, I think he won the Intertoto Cup with Villarreal, their good runs in Europe. The success came from us watching him play and watching a Villarreal team play with style and panache. And we hadn't seen... No one knew too much. No one knew much about Villarreal. And all of a sudden, we're getting all these players... Gradually, sooner or later, we started to realise we're really good, become household names, and the club has gone from strength to strength. And probably you look at two of the most important people, and that would be Pellegrini and Riquelme.
And he, in a sense, he helped to invent them, didn't he? Because Pellegrini went there. He was happy because Roy had a plan, and Pellegrini it fitted. Pellegrini wanted to play the style. They wanted to have a club style and all of that. And you had, of course, Senna, who was a terrific midfielder, the naturalised Spanish, who went on to have great success with the national team. But a bit of yin and yang, wasn't he, with the two of them? Senna was a hard-working, responsible guy, which gave Riquelme his head to play.
Yeah, and the team still had two up front. I know people hear me banging on about the Villarreal style to play with two up front. This goes back to then, even with Riquelme, the easy thing would have been we play Forlan up front and Riquelme just off of him. But it weren't. It was Jose Maria, Guillermo Franco were playing one of those alongside Forlan, with Riquelme playing in that free position where he could play where he wants, go wide, drop deep, get on the ball as much as he possibly can. So, everything was geared around, you know, and rightly so, for one of the most exciting players in world football to be playing for a smallish club. Like Villarreal, and it was a really good fit for that period of time that he was at El Madrigal.
One of the reasons people love him of a certain age, Terry, must be said, is his Championship Manager, Football Manager stats. So you're familiar with it, aren't you?
I'm not that familiar with it.
You don't while away your days on your laptop getting...
I just missed that. No.
Top division. No. You should. However, I went back on and I found it online. So this is when he was 30. This is how much they loved him. Corners, 20. Crossing, 19. Dribbling, 17. Finishing, 17. First touch, 18. Free kicks, 19. Long shots, 19. Passing, 20. Technique, 19, etc., etc. Creativity, 20. Decisions, 18. Determination, 19. Interesting one, because he's determined to have it his way. Flair, his pace wasn't good. Stamina, they've given him 16. And that's very generous.
Yeah, no, it's a weakness of his game. And that you look at all the clubs he's played for, even from when he was a young player, there has always been, and not just people in the press and saying, has he got the stamina? I think there was issues at the clubs that his body wasn't built to run 90 minutes doing box to box. It was short bursts of power. His pace wasn't great over long distances. I mean, to describe him as a player, I joked earlier about him having his foot on the ball. It would have been interesting to see how little coaching he had, because he was a street footballer. So when you see him play, there's so many occasions where he's doing the wrong thing absolutely brilliantly, because you were coached as a young player to keep the ball moving, to your first touch would be to take it into your path, to be aware of the awareness you would explain to a young player. You need to know where the ball is going to be going as you're receiving it. But Riquelme, he almost stops it every single time he got the ball and invites people to come in and somehow using the bottom of his foot, nutmegging people, double drag backs, thrived on and actually being surrounded. There's no get out, and somehow he used to get away. And he's we talked about a lack of stamina. There was no lack of body strength because it was a time when you were allowed to tackle a lot more fiercer than you are now. And he took a battery in every single game. But he antagonised players into making those challenges and seemed to enjoy it. So it was almost like the more impossible it got, the better he looked. Because, some of his skills to get out of these tight situations. Describing him, it isn't Messi where Messi's running at people. He did it standing still. So he'd put the ball there for you to try and take. You think you got a chance of getting it, and it's gone. He's dragged it away from you. And he's spun around, and he's got away. And great pass of the ball. His first touch wasn't particularly great. It was a long way short of being great, but it was when he stopped the ball and he dragged you in and he worked his way out magic. A lot of times his poor first touch meant he was then forced into evading challenges where you thought he was going to lose possession, and he didn't. You're not talking about a player that was like Zidane where the ball stuck. Mm. You know, it was. You're not talking about a player like Iniesta who moves the ball out of his feet and the. As people were coming in, Iniesta would shuffle it from his right foot to his left foot. No, Riquelme was, right, I'm going to stop the ball. Do you fancy taking it off me? No, you're not going to get it. There it is, gone. He was a brilliant footballer to watch.
What about the nutmeg as a part of football, the caño? Why the fascination? Why do we love nutmeg? What, as a pro, what was your... view.
I had no interest in it. I didn't care if I got nutmegs.
Right, okay.
And I didn't go looking for nutmegs.
Right.
But I had mates that I grew up with, mates every club I played for. Quite annoying, actually. We might lose, and they'd be, oh, yeah, a couple of nuts. And you think, really? You like, grow up. But then we all enjoyed watching it. You know, it would get replayed on telly. If it's a spectacularly good nutmeg, we see it time and time over and over again. But there are players that use it to the benefit of their game. And I count Riquelme in that category.
Yeah.
You know, he it was his way of getting out of an impossible situation. They've got him pinned in the corner flag. He'll either do a double drag back or just a drag back where he drags it away where the defender thinks he's going to get it. Drag back, I mean, with a ball underneath the foot and just drag the ball away from the defender. And sometimes, a lot of the time, just poke it through the legs when a defender thinks, oh, I've got his... Just completely forget that he's going to nutmeg them. So they launch into a tackle and he just prods it through their legs, rolls it through the legs and round the other side. So it was a big part of his game in a way that was good because it wasn't just for show.
He did warn famously against Yepes River Plate, and his Riquelme said that Yepes came out a bit strong. He said because he looked all the more manly for not kicking me. Because he obviously was used to being kicked over. So in those football manager stats, some of which you've disputed, so his first touch of 18 you think is too generous, his stamina of 16, penalty taking, we can definitely dispute this one, they're giving him a 20. And yet, most famously, probably his most famous moment in European football, certainly, was the one that he failed to score April the 25th, 2006, against Jens Lehmann. They needed to score to take the game to extra time, semi-final of the Champions
League.
In
their own stadium.
Yeah, and that was sort of the pinnacle of Villarreal, wasn't it? That, goal,
yeah.
They might have gone on and got to the Champions League final 2006, but that was a high watermark, and it was unfortunate, slightly, it sort of fits in with the poetry.
A classic Villarreal and classic Riquelme.
Yeah.
The way that his career went, as we mentioned earlier, we're not going to be talking about tons of trophies in his European career, a successful period in Argentinian football at the beginning and the end. But in Villarreal, we're not talking about a player that went away with a full trophy cabinet, but left so many good memories of people enjoying watching him play.
And in that game, Gianfranco had most of the chances in that game. Against...
Well, it's an interesting squad. I mean, looking back on it, I forgot. I knew Cazorla, obviously, was at Villarreal. He was a, he wasn't in that 11, but he played 20-odd appearances. Antonio Valencia, Man United, was in that squad. Only two league appearances. But you look at the rest of their players. You mentioned Marco Senna. Aaron Barrena and Gonzalo were the two central defenders. I used to love both the fullbacks, Javi Venter and Sorin, pushing forward on the fullback position. So when you got all those attacking players, they didn't need wingers, so Riquelme fitted into it nicely. A couple of strikers up front. They were really good, but their strength, actually, when you look at their run in the Champions League that year, was not conceding goals. So they weren't free-flowing in terms of scoring tons of goals. I think Riquelme got 15 league goals and Forlan got 25 the season before that got them into position to qualify out of La Liga. And I think they finished third, didn't they, the season before. So that was their big season, scoring goals, qualifying for the Champions League, beat Everton in the qualifying stage. Then we had the group stage. They beat... Then there was another match-up against Manchester United. They finished top of a group. Scored three goals and conceded one in the six games and went through top of the group. I think it was Lyon, Manchester United, Benfica. They beat Rangers on away goals. They beat Inter on away goals and then lost 1-0 in aggregate to Arsenal. So the team did kind of evolve in the fact that the season before was a lot of goals being scored. But in that one, the goals weren't flowing in as they did in the past, but it's classic Villarreal that people remember looking back at that team and Riquelme.
And in the end, he fell out with them. Went back 2006.
Same thing with Pellegrini, wasn't it?
Yeah.
As the previous coach, and yet this time the president chose the manager.
Yeah.
As opposed to Riquelme making... The president make a straight choice between him and the manager, and I think quite rightly in the end that Pellegrini was given the opportunity to progress with Villarreal.
And he went back to Boca and had more success, but there were various... He was linked with everybody. And
I look at his career, the whole thing was... he had this exactly the same path, Argentinos Juniors, Boca Juniors, Barcelona, as Maradona. So you get the comparison. He was right-footed, not left-footed. He wore the number 10. All those... So many players over the years have come across that comparison, haven't they? Saviola was another one. We've had different regions. We've had the Balkan Maradona, didn't we? The different... It was always... Everyone was looking out for a new Maradona. But I look at so many... Career choice. Ultimately, his career choices weren't bad, but the amount of times he nearly joined another club, I think he was offered to West Ham at one stage. He from Barcelona, I think, when they were looking to move him out because of Ronaldinho coming in, and the amount of last minute changes of minds where he almost appeared he was on the verge of signing for a club here and a club there, and that fell through and that fell through. He shared the same agent as Diego Forlán, whose career seemed to be more of a more in tune with a normal professional footballer. But I think different personalities there. Forlan appears to be a guy that tends to get on with everybody. His time didn't run its course. There was always other reasons why he moved on. But Riquelme, there was a short period of time before people got to know him deeper, and then you had to weigh up the merits of, do we keep this hugely talented footballer who is bordering on genius, but can be disruptive.
Maxi on the right, Riquelme on the left. It's Riquelme! Golazo! Gol! Juan Román Riquelme, Argentina 1! Argentina 1! A beautiful goal!
A gift from the gods!
And so go back to that summer of 2006, the nearly summer... was nearly in another way as well, because obviously that was his only World Cup, played for Argentina, 2006. And again, for younger people, they were brilliant, that Argentina team, a real unfulfilled potential, one of the best performances of Argentina in recent years, a 6-0 win in the World Cup against Serbia and Montenegro, who weren't a great team, but were, you know, a hard-working European team. And he was instrumental. Now, he was the leader of the team, wasn't he, despite the hugely talented players around him. He was the one who played in a way that dictated and forced everyone to play with him.
And didn't he get taken off when
Yeah, so they're winning against Germany and looking really comfortable, 72 minutes in.
Peckerman was it?
Yeah.
He fell out with Peckerman, and Peckerman was his coach at youth team level for Argentina. And it appeared they had a good relationship till that went horribly wrong as well when Peckerman took him off. Germany equalised, I think, then went on penalties, and everybody blames Peckerman for taking off a player when they were leading 1-0 that was controlling the tempo, controlling possession, and the leader of the team. Now, whether Peckerman thought he was taking him off to rest him for the next round was a bit foolish, but it's another example of the up-and-down career that Riquelme had. He even retired from Argentina, didn't he?
Yes.
Yeah. And then come back within just over a year later.
Yeah.
And accumulated a lot more caps again, so there was always an issue with him.
Although he never, in the end, it was ironically, it was Maradona who did for his international career.
And I think he even played with Maradona. They joined up together at Boca Juniors. When he went back to Boca Juniors, Maradona was still around the club, still playing. And allegedly they got on really well, yet then Maradona and him have a fallout. And then Maradona was encouraging him to continue playing again for Boca Juniors. It might have been a third time, I think, as well. So he tends to wear people down, but he must endear himself. Not only with his football skills, but there must be something about his personality that people fell out of him, but then were quite willing to give it another go. Maradona and Riquelme falling out. Who'd have thought that?
So again,
didn't he have a pop-up Messi as well, didn't they? They shared the same birthday. And I read a story about an international trip where he had a party in his room and then Messi turned up and basically told him to piss off, that he weren't his party. young Messi, that was at the time. So he was the leader of Argentina. He was leader of every team he played for, wasn't he?
Yeah, yes. Can you think of anyone, before we wrap up, is there anyone like him? Or is that why we like him? The nearest I could think of in playing side would be Isco, in that
He gets the same accusations.
Yeah,
that he always slows the game down. Yeah. He holds the ball up. He takes too many touches. Yep, I would agree with that.
And hard to put into a category
of
a
position. Yeah, who probably is, but in Isco's case, has never had the luxury of being at Malaga.
Yeah,
I think he was afforded under Pellegrini, funny enough, the opportunity to play in a role where it suited him best, got the best out of him. We've seen since he's been at Real Madrid, he's either been wide or in midfield. Wide of a front three, in a midfield three, wide in a midfield four. That's all the same issues that we're talking about with Riquelme. And maybe, I think that's a good comparison, Isco.
So last question, where are we placing Riquelme? Is it world class, but only on his terms?
Yeah, I would say he was world class. I think we shouldn't underestimate his success with Boca Juniors as well.
Yeah,
at both spells.
Yeah,
he talks about the Intercontinental Cup. Then that is what we call now the World Club Cup, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, and a couple of South American titles.
Yeah, so he was successful with Boca Juniors, and a massive player for Boca Juniors. And left. Do you know he left a massive imprint, didn't he, on European football in a relatively short space of time? We're talking four seasons?
Yeah, four and a bit, wasn't it? Yeah.
Most of it at Villarreal. One season we didn't really leave much of an imprint. So in a short space of time, I think for a player to make that impact and leave that impression, it's rare and phenomenal. And I think that just goes to show the type of player we're talking about on one of these podcasts where we're going to pick similar players that left, a legacy. And that's what Riquelme did.
So there we are, ladies and gentlemen. We hope you've enjoyed looking back with us on Juan Román Riquelme. We'll take your suggestions as well. Any players?
Got one last thing on that. Do you know Zidane? Did you see the story about Zidane and his last game? Was against Villarreal.
Yes.
And the player, his last ever game as a professional footballer, apart from the World Cup, of course, for Real Madrid. At the end of the game, he ran across and wanted the shirt of Riquelme as opposed to keeping his own shirt. So I think that sums up Riquelme, that Zidane knows a bit about a player or two, and he was full of admiration for Riquelme and wanted his shirt as a lasting memento.
So if there's anyone else you'd like us to look back on and have, do a little bit of a history lesson on, then get in touch via our Twitter account, LaLiga_weekly, and we'll go back through the files. And
we're busy working on the Gaisca Toquero one, aren't we?
that's the pinnacle. That's obviously you have to pay separately.
We'll put
them
for the awards.
Yes. Right. So the regular podcasts keep coming. So every weekend we'll be there looking back at that weekend's La Liga. We'll have the specials as well. So keep in touch. Let us know who you want us to talk about and keep listening.